So God gave me a sermon 2 weeks ago called Family Feud. And I'm talking about Joseph. And so last week I get here and hardly anybody's here. So I say, what do? I want to preach to the whole church about families, about trouble in families. So I recruited Daryl, and he and I had a Q&A. You asked questions, we gave scriptural answers. And so I said, next week we're going to come back to Joseph and Family Feud. And so here we are. And one of the things I found out that every family has problems. Every family has difficulties. And they're quite intensive sometimes. In fact, even famous people have problems in their families, and sometimes it's violence and abuse. And so I checked out a number of famous people, including Dr. Laura Schlesinger, who wrote, "My family was not in any way loving. The tension, the anger, the dissension, the lack of love and affection all had its impact on me. And up to the age of 13, I thought my name was stupid or lazy because that's what my father always told me." Well, there's a lot of not-so-famous people have problems in their families, too. And here we are, a collection of not-so-famous people sitting here today, and we've got problems in the family. And I'm going to share some problems who struggled. Joseph, we're going to see how he got crushed by his family, those closest to him. Now, the story of Joseph is the largest segment in all of the book of Genesis. It comprises about 25%. It goes from chapter 37 to chapter 50. Chapter 38 is an interlude about Judah and his escapades there. But no other story in Genesis comes as close to the amount of material as we're looking at today in this matter. Joseph's name means, by the way, God will add or increase. And for all of his painful experiences, the story ends in increase. An increase in wealth, an increase in standing, and an increase in family. Yes, his name was truly given to him with meaning. Well, the story starts when Joseph is 17. Anybody 17 in this room? Okay, not quite there, maybe a long time there ago. Yeah, but he dies at 110. Anybody 110 in here? Yeah, so not quite, yeah. And there are some major episodes in his life, and I want to tell you what they are so you get a feel for the chapters of his life. The first episode is Joseph is sold by his brothers into Egypt, and we get to learn today all about that. And then his rise to success in Potiphar's house. And then his prison experiences, there were two of them. His rise to power under Pharaoh. The first famine visit by his brothers to Egypt. The second famine visit by his brothers to Egypt. And then the migration of Joseph's family to Egypt from Canaan. And then finally, Jacob, the father, the patriarch's blessing on each of his sons and his death. For me, I don't know if it would be good for you, but for me, the most meaningful way for me to get this story is to read it in one sitting. And so I start in Genesis 37, and I read all the way through chapter 50, and every time I read the story, after all these many times, I still cry. It's a tearjerker. Today, all we can do is look at episode 1 in his life, the conspiracy against Joseph by his brothers, and his consequent sale as a slave into Egypt, chapter 37. Now, there are 36 verses in this chapter. I'm not going to take the time to read it, but I want to tell you the story so that you have an understanding, or I'll refresh you in the story about what happened. Jacob, also called what? Israel, lived in Canaan, present-day Israel, with his 12 sons, one daughter, I bet you she was a fighter, one daughter, and their families. And they were quite successful in their business of livestock. And one day, Joseph was out tending the flocks with his brothers. And boys will be boys. And they did something they shouldn't have done. What did Joseph do? He went home to his father and he tattled. It was not a good move. Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children. And we'll see this play into the sermon later on. Because Joseph was the son of his old age by his favorite wife, Rachel. Jacob didn't keep that affection for Joseph a secret. He made Joseph this special robe that did nothing but draw attention that he was the special son. Ever since I was a kid, I was taught that Joseph's robe was a robe of many colors. In fact, Dolly Parton's song, Coat of Many Colors, comes from this particular thing. The only problem was it wasn't a robe of many colors. It was a different thing. It was a coat, rather, that was long-sleeved and ankle-length and elaborately decorated. And it was the robe that the ruling class would wear. And his brothers, what would they wear? They would wear a robe, all right, but it was the common robe, sleeveless or short sleeve, knee length, and you worked in those robes. And every time his brothers saw Joseph wear that stinking robe, they resented him. And the favoritism of Jacob the father so affected the boys that Joseph and his brothers couldn't even have a decent conversation. Now, I'm probably one of the most prolific dreamers in the church. Last night I had another dream, and I'm not allowed to tell you what that dream is because it was a naughty dream. It was one where I was in church and I had a fight in the church. Yeah, so Marie said, you were talking out loud about that in your sleep. But you know, I have these unusual dreams, and then I forget them. They're gone. But Joseph had dreams that he did not forget. And so he had a dream one night, and the next day he told his brothers a dream. He said, hey, guys, you got to hear this. I had a dream last night, and I dreamt that we all got bundles of grain and stood them upright in the field. And suddenly, my bundle stood up, and you all, your bundles, bowed before my bundle. The thought that the favorite son would rule over the brothers infuriated them. Now, how many would think that Joseph should have figured this out by now, that he shouldn't antagonize his brothers? So what did he do? I don't think he had ill intent, but what did he do? He has another dream. Instead of shut up about it, he goes and he talks to his brothers and his father and mother. And he says, you got to hear my latest dream. The sun, the moon, and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. And even now, his father Jacob says, that's enough. Don't want to hear any more of your dreams. And the brothers, after hearing that dream, were even more enraged. Well, one day, Joseph's brothers led their flocks northward. He wasn't there. They went from Hebron to Shechem. And it was some 50 miles away. And after a period of time, they didn't come back. So Jacob sends his son, Joseph, go find your brothers. Bring back word. What are they doing? How are they doing? And so he goes to Shechem. There's no sign of his brothers. And somebody had overheard where they were going. He said, oh, they moved on. Another 50 miles. They're up in Dothan right now. 15 miles, that is. So go up and find them. And Joseph continued on, and he found them. But before he got there, his brothers see him coming in the distance. And they couldn't miss that robe. And the conversation went something like this. Here comes that dreamer of a brother. Let's kill him and throw him in the pit. And we're going to tell Dad that a fierce animal killed him. That idea was too much for Reuben, the firstborn of the brothers. So he says, hey, I got another idea. Let's not kill him. Let's throw him into a pit and tell Dad that a fierce animal got him. Be the same kind of thing. That idea was too much for Reuben. He said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to put him in that pit. And then his idea was, I am going to go and find my brother Joseph when nobody's around, and I'm going to rescue him, take him to my father, and I'm going to get on his good side. Well, they all agreed to not to kill Joseph, and Joseph arrives, and they overpower him. They remove that robe. They throw him into the deep and empty cistern. I cannot imagine what was going on through Joseph's mind to be ambushed like this. And I want you to know, by now his brothers are really hard. Joseph is in the pit screaming, and his brothers are eating a meal. And they're plotting further what they're going to do. When Judah chimes in, hey guys, if we're not going to kill him, see those Ishmaelite traders coming? Let's sell them there. And they sold them to the Ishmaelite traders going to Egypt for 20 shekels of silver. Now, Reuben had been gone for some time when all this happened, and he got there, and his brothers were gone. He couldn't find Joseph, so he went looking for them and finally found his brother. He said, what in the world's going on? Where's Joseph? And they bring Reuben up to date and decide to deceive their father and said, let's kill a goat, and let's dip Joseph's robe in the blood and take it to Dad. And that's what they did. And so when they got back home, they said to their father, recognize this robe? We found it. And do you think it's Joseph's? And Jacob said, no question. My son has been killed and torn to pieces by a fierce animal. And he went into immediate visible mourning, and none of the family could comfort Jacob. Now you can imagine just how sincere the comfort was by the boys. But Jacob kept on saying, with Joseph, my son, dead, I don't want to live anymore. And some people get to that stage. Meanwhile, the Ishmaelite traders are in now Egypt. They sell Joseph to Potiphar, an officer in Pharaoh's army, the captain of the guard. And that is scene one. That's the one we're talking about today, the story of Joseph. And if you didn't pick it up by now, this family has serious problems. Maybe your family does too. We'll see. In 1915, long time ago, the poet Robert Frost wrote in The Death of the Hired Man, home is the place where, when you go there, they have to take you in. Sounds good, but that's not true anymore, is it? They don't have to take you in. Home has changed a lot. You know, it feels bad to be unaccepted by people. And when you have problems, you know, you can find a new job. You can find a new house. You can find a new town. You can even find a new church. But can you find a new family? And we're finding lots of situations today where the family won't take you in. And that was the case with Joseph and his brothers. Sometimes the hardest place on earth to shine is at home. Things can get pretty messy there. So here's the big idea of my sermon today. From the life of Joseph, we can learn some crucial lessons about dealing with difficult family members. So we're going to find five lessons here from Joseph's life that if you've got difficult family members, what to think and do about that. So let's get on with it. Some crucial lessons about dealing with difficult family members. Crucial lesson number one is do not antagonize difficult family members. Do not antagonize them. You know, all families struggle with difficult moments. Say amen, okay? I mean, we all got our problems. We all got our problems. Don't think it's strange. But in most families, there are a few people that are really hard to deal with. They're difficult people. They're overly sensitive, judgmental, easily offended, hard to please, strongly opinionated, and you feel like you have to walk on eggshells. You know anybody in your family like that? We call these people ERG people, extra grace required people. They could be a spouse, a parent, a child, a sibling, an in-law, you name it. Reminds me of a book by this actual title, When Difficult Relatives Happen to Good People. I like that. You've got to treat people like this with special care or you will pay dearly for it. Now, in all the Bible, Joseph is one of the few heroes where nothing is said bad about him. But at age 17, he wasn't too bright about family relationships. He kept on doing things to make matters worse, antagonizing the antagonized brothers. In verse 3, he tattles on them. I already told you that. He keeps on wearing that offensive robe. And then knowing that his first dream ticked them off, he goes to the second dream. And I don't think he meant to anger his brothers, but he was either too naive or too spoiled, and he kept adding fuel to the fire. Now, maybe you don't, but most of us have difficult people in our families, and I'm thinking of a few right now in mine. You know, we need to be authentic with them, but we shouldn't instigate situations we know will make matters worse, especially politics and religion and some other kinds of things. You can figure out who you can talk with and who you shouldn't. But the truth is, you cannot go equally deep with every family member. Sometimes all you can do is stay surface with some of them. And when you have a difficult family member, you realize things aren't going to change. So you have to do what the Apostle Paul tells us to do in Romans 12, 18. If possible, so far as it depends on who? You live peaceably with everyone. And so there are some people in your families you have to stay surface with. You can't dig deeply. You can't talk about some certain things or you'll have trouble. You will antagonize them. So you just have to avoid them, be nice to them, be Christian to them, but don't push their buttons and watch what you say on Facebook. Here's the second critical lesson about Joseph's family. Number two, parents shouldn't play favorites. Parents shouldn't play favorites. Jacob did not make it a secret that he favored Joseph above all of his other children. And he went so far as to make that special robe of honor that should have been the firstborn's Reuben. And that put a wedge between the other children and their father, and a huge grudge between Joseph and his brothers. And it was something they couldn't get past. And every time they saw that robe, it made things worse. Some of you are old enough to remember that comedy duo, the Smothers Brothers. Anybody remember the Smothers Brothers? If you are a young person, get online and look up the Smothers Brothers and listen to them. They're fun. And we've lost a lot of that kind of fun today in our humor. But anyway, there used to be this saying Tommy used to say to his brother Dick, "Mama always liked you best. Mama always liked you best." And you know, when that is true, kids feel it very deeply. And it does bad things to sibling relationships. My parents had two children. I was the oldest and I had a sister. And my earliest memories is that one of my parents liked me best. And as I grew up, I was kind of like Joseph. I was a decent kid, and I kind of wore my special robe, as it were, in front of my sister. And it never dawned on me as a child that I was doing damage to my sister. Now, my sister and I have had a decent relationship over the years. But something surfaced a few years ago when I was visiting her in her home that I thought would never happen. She said, "I want to talk to you about something." Well, sure, talk about it. She said, "I want to talk to you about the favoritism I felt from that one parent in our family." And she said, "I know it wasn't your fault, but I've held things all these years against you from those painful memories." And she asked me to forgive her about some of the things she thought about me that I never knew. And so we talked it out and we cried together. And from this angle in life, after many years, I began to feel her pain. And I confessed how I played right into that situation when we were home. And you know, after that conversation, my relationship with my sister went to a deeper level. It was so good. Favoritism is very damaging to family relationships. Avoid it at all costs. And if you have been damaged by that, there might be some steps that you need to take. Crucial lesson number three. Don't let bitterness grip your heart. Don't let bitterness grip your heart. Family life is so interesting. You know, you fall in love, you get married, you never think you get mad at the person you're going to marry. And then those babies come and they spit up and they poop and they do all that, and you just go love them. It doesn't matter what they do. And then all of a sudden time goes by, and the people you love so much and thought never get in your way hurt you, your spouse and your children. And you feel hurt by the people you love. Now, if you feel that hurt over and over and over again, and if you don't deal with it properly, you will get angry, and anger will move to bitterness, and bitterness will develop into some form of hate. And you can see that progression in the lives of Joseph's brothers. Every time they felt hurt by Joseph, their hatred grew more intense. Unresolved jealousy and bitterness, plus the passage of time, will always find destructive outlets. Finally, it reached the point where Joseph's brothers decided to really hurt him, and their hate was so painful they conspired, as you know, to kill him. But you know, it's hard to kill your own flesh and blood, and they admitted that much in verse 27. So they found another way to remove him from their lives, and they sold Joseph into Egypt. Friends, you can tell when bitterness and hate are getting out of control because you want to find a way to remove that person from your life. Now, I'm not talking about killing them, but avoiding them. And that's why some family members refuse to see other family members. That's why some couples separate and divorce. The pain in the relationship has got to the point that they don't want to have that person in their lives anymore. And they take steps to remove that person from being around them. Now, hear me clearly. Sometimes you have to separate because of danger and other kinds of things. But it should never be because you can't stand the person and you'd rather live life without them. That's exactly what Joseph's brothers did. Now, you might be saying to yourself, but you don't know what they did to me. Or, I don't have that kind of hate. Well, maybe that's true. But we all want to have the right to be offended and be mad about it, aren't we? Right? We all want that. We all want people around us who will agree that we've been hurt and that we have the right to feel ill will. But not as Christ followers. That stuff destroys relationships. And Paul echoes the words of Jesus in Romans 12:14 when he says, bless those who hurt you, bless and do not curse them. Now, I have to tell you, this isn't easy. Feeling hurt by family members is one of the hardest things to let go of. It really is. So what is the alternative to feeling bitterness? It takes us to crucial lesson number 4. Forgive those who sin against you. Now, the story of Joseph would have ended in chapter 37 had Joseph not forgiven his brothers. In fact, the text never does say outwardly that he did, but you can tell by the flow of all the other chapters that Joseph forgave his brothers, and Joseph lived out the rest of his life without bitterness and hate in his heart. And you know, the same thing was true in chapter 39 and 40 when Joseph was in prison. He forgave those who imprisoned him. And that's why Joseph found favor with God and that he was free to enjoy life wherever he was. Let me tell you the essence of forgiveness so that you understand what it is. It has 2 parts. Number 1, forgiveness is transferring to God our desire to inflict a penalty or pain on others for the pain they've caused us. We want people to feel pain. When we forgive, we give that up. We give vengeance to God. The second part of forgiveness is, and this is so cool, forgiveness is freeing ourselves from the emotional stranglehold that those who have hurt us can have on us. You see, we give up our desire to have them feel pain, but also when we forgive, that continuous and controlling fixation that we have towards that offending party subsides and we become free of them. Now, the amazing thing is this. I don't want you to miss this. It only takes one person to forgive, not 2. One person. Now, I know we'd all like the other person to say, please forgive me, I was wrong too, and so forth. But you know what? You don't need the other person to say, I'm sorry. They don't have to forgive you in return. All you have to do is to forgive them, and you will be able to be free from the emotional stranglehold they would have on you if you don't. Lack of forgiveness always imprisons the person who doesn't forgive. And when Jesus was on the cross, what did he say to those who hurt him? Father, forgive them. They do not know what they're doing. And you know it's true. When people come against us to hurt us, they don't know what they're doing, even though they think that they do. And so in forgiveness, we release that grip that unforgiveness has on our hearts. And even though they may never say they are sorry, I want you to know a little secret about forgiveness. The one who forgives benefits the most. It is not the other person who's forgiven. The one who benefits the most is the one who does the forgiving. And now the final crucial lesson I want you to hear as our time is getting away. Entrust the outcome to God. I love the song that you sang in the band. It was about, you know, letting God's at work. God's at work. You may not see it, but God's at work. This is what this is all about right here. That God is at work behind the scenes. And when it didn't look like anything was going to happen and all would tank, God was working out something. In fact, he was not going to let this family fall apart because the Savior would come through this family. God was working behind the scenes. And guess what? The dreams that Joseph had finally came to play because God orchestrated a famine. And with the famine came the brothers and food. And it took a lot of time, but Joseph eventually reconciled with his brothers. And all the crap that his brothers did to him, God turned around so Joseph could say, it wasn't you who sent me here, but God. God sent me before you to preserve you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. And so there was tough sledding for Joseph. But the end of the story was not until chapter 50 when God played his hand and showed that he was behind everything that had happened. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail with this, but When my wife was 11 years old, her family separated. It was a bitter divorce. And for years, the whole family was angry at each other, siblings and relatives and everything. And it didn't look like that would ever come around. And me as the husband was wondering, is this ever going to reconcile? But you know what? God was at work even through bad things that happened in the family. And about 12 years ago, the reconciliation began. We all realized God was at work. And why am I telling you the story? I want you to hope that God can do something for you too. It may not be now, but he's at work. And his specialty is reconciliation if our hearts are soft. If you have family members that are difficult and things don't seem to be turning around, just remember, God is at work. God is at work. God is at work. Well, Joseph didn't let his family destroy his heart. You know, he may be the greatest type of Christ in the Old Testament, being sent by his father, despised, rejected, betrayed unto death by those closest to him for money while keeping his heart pure. And Jesus said, that's the example for you as well. As someone has aptly said, there's a little sap in every family tree. And I know sometimes that sap really gets on your nerves, and some people say, if you don't know there's a sap in your tree, family tree, it's probably you. But you know what? Your chapter won't stop at 37 if your heart is soft. And if you can forgive, you can go to chapter 50 in your life as well. I'm going to ask you to bow your heads right now. I'm going to offer an invitation for a raised hand in just a moment to share and play softly. But if you've got a family situation that's difficult, if you don't have a lot of faith that it'll turn around, if perhaps you're not treating some people in your family well because they've hurt you, or if your family has wounded you and it goes back even years, I'm asking you to, right now, raise your hand. I want to pray for you. Nobody's looking around. Yeah, I see hands. God knows who you are. I don't know your situation, but God does. Anybody else? I see many hands up. Yeah, okay, you may put them down. Father, as we run out of time today, you don't run out of time. You're the eternal God. And I pray there's some wounds right now that you would heal those wounds in a beginning process. I pray, Lord, if there happens to be hardness of heart and an unwillingness to reconcile and forgive, or at least forgive, that you would give them an openness to that as well. I pray, Father, if the situation looks hopeless, that you would give them a sense that behind you are working something that someday they could believe that things will work out that seems so hopeless today. It happened to Joseph, it happened to Marie and me. I pray it will happen to them. And so, God, we commend those who raise their hands to you right now, that they might sense the power of God falling on them and a new path to chart for them in their relationships with their families. And I pray it in Jesus' name. And all God's people said, amen. You are dismissed.